Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. Today is going to be a bit more personal episode, and a bit less news because, oh boy, a lot of things happened with me during the past 24 hours. Now, let's start with the fact that after I recorded that episode yesterday, and we started packing, I, you know, packed everything and we went to the train. And it seemed quite normal. We went there to get there about 2.5 hours before our train leaves, because we wanted to get there before the curfew, and we also needed to grab a cab, so as the cab driver could also go home before his curfew. And we were just drinking coffee across the street from the Odessa train station. And we finished our coffee, and it was like about 2 hours left until the train. We decided that it was quite cold, and we decided to go inside. But what turned out was that while we were drinking coffee, someone had called and announced that there was a bomb inside the train station. So we spent about 2 hours, 2.5 hours, maybe three, I really don't know the time, waiting in the bomb shelter. There were air raid sirens, of course, and cops everywhere, and people just stuffed together, and it was really scary. We were dragged inside of an underground tunnel that served as a makeshift bomb shelter. And no one knew what to do because people were waiting for the trains. And in that situation, when, you know, you have a reserved hotel, I'll get to that later, and train tickets and everything ready, you really start getting a bit worried. I managed to post on Twitter and on Facebook because, well, me and Kyle always had nothing much else to do. And thankfully, we met Kirill, who is a design director from Donbass, who had moved to Kiev, who translated from Ukrainian to us because they only speak Russian, and police were, well, some of them spoke Russian, but a lot of them spoke Ukrainian. It was pretty cold. We talked about the war and talked about the attitude, and everyone around me spoke Russian and some spoke Ukrainian, and we got a bunch of pics, which will be uploaded later on because Kalvis uses a lot of analog camera here with the film. But in the end, after they had called in dogs and we were still in there, and massive air sirens were sounded, and we just waited there and talked to each other, and I kind of understood that, you know, in extreme situations, you can either panic or you can get together with people and start talking with them. And, well, I'll probably write this down for my Latvian readers and maybe work through this for a longer episode because, yeah, as Kirill stated, everyone who was basically pro-Ukrainian had run away from Donbass and they really wanted to go home again. But, well, after a long while, trains were not allowed to enter the station. Everything was delayed and it was really scary. The cops, together with the army, made some sort of a cordon, a small line through which we could run, and we had to run first. Like, people who were going on the Lvov train, they were running in groups, and then, well, while carrying heavy bags and yelling around and everything being translated, we were evacuated, in a way, from that position and on the train. And then we got on the train, and heart was racing already, and it was extremely hot. So I really didn't sleep last night. Probably you can hear that in my voice. But, yeah, that was a scary experience. I really don't know how to present this in audible form, but, yeah, war is a scary place, and when you have people with guns around, and I mean, when you can hear and feel the mob, because at these situations, you know, I've been in stressful situations, but I've been there with very few people. But that's the biggest issue, since the cops also yelled a lot, since in these types of situations you kind of go a bit mental in a way, and you want to know what's going on, and a lot of people don't know what's going on, so that was really scary. Then, well, something good happened. In the morning, we arrived in Kiev, where we are now, and first thing we did was go into our embassy, because we need to get our documents ready, and our embassy currently has just a single worker in there, who's now our acting ambassador, and yeah, tomorrow I'm going to do both some reporting and also that sad personal part that I had to do, because tomorrow we're going to Bucha and Irpin, and it's probably going to be a really sad episode tomorrow for you guys, but those things need to be made. However, I also arranged some nice interviews. We're gonna have a real discussion about military matters with the Ukrainian territorial defense, the higher up person, and we're gonna have a longer special interview, fully edited and everything, with the person who literally wrote the book about how Putin's propaganda works, which is now, by the way, shown by Maria Zakharova and others as proof of hostile anti-Russian Russophobia elements here. So expect an interview with Mykola Davidyuk, and it's going to be great. If you've heard about him, well, then that should be awesome. And then, well, after all this stress and everything, some good news happened as well. But after all that, we had managed on our trip to basically book a hotel. And, it was called, I think it was the Black Sea Hotel in Kyiv or something. And our booking.com reservations worked and everything, but when we arrived there from our cab, turns out that, probably shouldn't trust booking.com and if you're going to a war zone, because a lot of hotels showed up as open there, so we didn't really worry. Turns out we should have, because that hotel turned out to be, closed. And a guard opened the door and just stated that, hey, what's up, guys? Who are you? I'm listening to you. And then we showed him our papers and everything, and, that turned to be a bunch of money wasted, but I hope that booking.com actually, provides for this, because, they've helped previously, so this is going to be managed. And then the kind of the panicky moment, we started calling out, and it turns out that out of all the hotels and everything, yeah, to get an Airbnb here in Ukraine, you have to basically photo your passport, show your journalist accreditation. It's a terrible process, and it's really messy, and, it's still a lot of time. There's still this curfew. So we ended up finding the one hotel that actually was open and could take us in, and even then they asked for the green accreditation card, which I am getting tomorrow because of our nice acting ambassador, Edvins, who managed to call up the authorities because he slightly laughed and said that during war times, yeah, just emails are hard to get through. And previously in Odessa, I couldn't go to the offices myself, because to go to the offices, you need the accreditation card, which we couldn't get because we didn't even know you needed one, because they just made it into law as we were leaving. Not the luckiest of trips, but yeah, wow. we accidentally had to spend a lot of money today. Like, in total, let's see now. Yeah, about 500 euros. Large cut of our budget. We're still sort of okay-ish, but if you can help, please do, because we're staying here until the 15th and doing all these interviews and reportings and everything, and then we're going to be going back home. I think we're going to be home at 17th or 18th. But the work will, of course, continue, because that's going nowhere. But just in case, even if you plan everything ahead of time, even if you work hard and are meticulous about your equipment and everything, turns out that circumstances can just make sure that if you're stressed enough and air raid sirens start poking your mind when you're looking for an emergency hotel, yeah, weird things can happen. The good news is that there's a lot of press people staying at this hotel because it seems that this is the only one that there is. So yeah, I'll be working hard after I again get some sleep to interview some of those people. But yeah, crazy Latvian adventures in now Kyiv. I hope that tomorrow we're going to have a really great episode. But I can't just leave you like this with just the personal side of this trip, which has been really exhausting, and at least I get to see the people. I'm going to have to write an article as well tomorrow and take a bunch of pics myself and get an interview with some of the locals there and deal with the cousin. Yeah, it's not going to be an easy day, but we'll manage. However, here's some news, because although I hadn't had enough time to catch up throughout all of this situation on everything that's happening, I have still prepared some interesting things from you. For starters, we have more stuff from Mr. Igor Girkin. Girkin hasn't posted any direct news about the goings-on in the war, because, well, the war is stalling down, and we'll see a massive attack on Donbas soon enough. But he reports that his comrade has returned from his trip to Kherson. Kherson is the city just above the Black Sea, the only sort of major city Russians have taken. And he claims that his friend went there with a humanitarian mission. Well, that's doubtable, but maybe that's true. Who knows? Maybe our good old friend Strelkov, Mr. Girkin, has finally found some consciousness, which I highly doubt. But hey, chances still slightly, ever so slightly, slightly less than zero. And he apparently had called up and stated, you know what? What you're writing about this war are, like, way too optimistic. And here's some things that he gathered from the discussion with a person who had been in Kherson. And there are a bunch of points. Number one, people adapt to everything. The city's alive. People are walking around, cars are driving around, there's food in the stores, there are private commercial enterprises selling gasoline. Everyday life is just happening. The kind of the communal services are working, although most of the local clerks have been, you know, have run away even before Russian Federation forces arrived. In Kherson itself, there are no battles right now, but regularly you can hear artillery blasts in the surrounding areas. And yeah, I can assure you that they're pretty loud and they can be heard. Number two, Kherson itself is pretty much blasted down. And, well, Igor Girkin's friends claims that it looks worse than any other regional center in Russia that he's seen. That probably could be, you know, stated because of the war. But I can't really claim anything since I haven't been to Kherson. And unless it gets liberated by Ukraine, I probably won't go there either because, well, I kind of want to come back home. However, he also states that if you arrive, then inside of the city, everything is in Ukrainian flags. And apparently there's only one Russian flag inside the city. And it is also just in the commercial where, quote, how Americans create velo paths for bikes. And he adds, you can notice very strongly the presence of foreign NGOs. Number three, there is no civilian administration as such. Russian authorities act without any consensus among themselves, and no one has any instructions what to do. The FSB don't know about the army doesn't know about the FSB, and even the army among themselves, they don't know anything, and they don't really coordinate anything with anyone. It's a total chaos. And inside the army, the units that are supposed to fight, everything is in shambles and in the mess too. The commanders are talking amongst each other using Ukrainian SIM cards. No one understands anything. All the decisions are spontaneous. Logistics is, well, using kind of Russian system, it's 3- by American standards. That would be a D with a minus. Everything's being held up by younger officers on the local spots, sergeants and the like. Number five, if you're on the spot there, after you speak with the locals, you understand that this war is definitely also a civilian one. And besides, the kind of how you pick your side, that's clearly just a purely political question. It doesn't even, you know, depend on the language anymore. Number six, the battle for the minds of people, Russian Federation is losing. Because no one really understands anything. Will Russia stay or leave? And the local pro-Russian forces are sitting very quietly. They left Ukrainian TV, just cut off the news channels. And no, not everyone has Russian channels. Point seven. As a follow-up for this, the kind of the attitude towards the war in the local society, well, you know, pro-Russian everything, pro-Russian feels dominate. He states that approximately 30% of the people are for Russia, 50% are for Ukraine, and 20% just don't care. And in the surrounding countryside area, the attitude towards Russians is way worse than inside a city. And the pro-Russian people are very, very quiet. There are no guarantees about the future. However, there is fear and kind of this feeling of being lost. And there are no guarantees from Russia to anyone. And, well, they are a minority. A lot of so-called activists basically moved away just after 2014. And yeah, point number eight. If ignoring the fact that that most people are pro-Ukrainian, locals all over basically go to Russia. But they don't leave for Russia, just most of them just go for gasoline, food, meds, and after that they just returned. Apparently there are lines stretching from 24 to 48 hours on the border to on the side of Simferopol, which is Crimea. Number 9. The pro-Ukrainian part of the population is active and very loud. And not just because that they are less afraid of consequences. It's more motivated. Ukraine is giving these people a clear view of the future. Quote, we'll get into European Union, they'll give us money, we're gonna improve our qualities of lives, and, well, we'll be respected by the whole West, and the world will be friendly to us. And here, Igor Girkin's friend states, and doesn't even matter how based in reality these thoughts are, just the fact that they have a strong, clear goal. They have something to fight for, both soldiers and the civilians. And there, he criticizes his own Russians. He states, and what future does Russian Federation offer them? Even if we leave, but that's not known exactly, so we will, as previously, celebrate the 9th of May. But yeah, turns out it's not enough in 2022. Ukrainian viewpoint is way clearer. And this is the thing. The most important part is the final point, which states that in the territory of Russian Federation, the same civil war is happening, just the cold one. The subject of this war is, well, whether we keep our real Russian sovereignty or we will be in cahoots, in ties with the evil West and finally rot from within. Which is, this is just a part of Igor Girkin's My Best Enemy's ultra-chauvinistic imperialistic mindset. He's definitely not happy about what's happening there. He's actively starting to think, and he really blames Putin for not doing enough and not being aggressive enough in this war, actively calling for, you know, him being checked for what if Russian government actually wants to sabotage the whole thing so that they can line up their own pockets. And this is also kind of the answer to all those people who state that, Putin somehow represents Russian interests. He doesn't. Even people who are pro-war and who I think might even genuinely believe that Ukrainians are fascists and the West are fascists and everything's evil here. Yeah, we in the super evil West, if only we could get our own stuff together. But this shows that even such people, even they don't like Putin and they don't consider Putin to be a very representative figure. And that gives us quite a lot to think about. And does the West even have a clear message? Ukrainians do now, so that gives them motivation. I think we should do everything in our powers to not break that down. And yeah, I'll end with this today. Happiness is mandatory. And please, if you can, go to theeasternborder.lv and click the donate button because, yeah, all those expenses. And of course, huge thanks to all the Patreon supporters because that helps our show long term. And, well, gives me some hope for the future myself. So yeah. And of course donate to the Ukrainian army. Don't donate to the Russians. Russians sadly donate by themselves because yeah, we have this nice little system where as right now a lot of looters are known. I have some friends who let's just say relieve them from their monetary assets and donate them to the Ukrainian army, which is what we are doing. But yeah, tired now and again. До свидания, товарищи. Happiness is mandatory. And please, please do support the show if you can, because, yeah, today was extra harsh. Tomorrow is going to be even harsher. But not because of stress or any tough things that I should do, but purely mentally. But, you know, like they say in Ukraine, one of the few words I've learned, переможем.